I submit to you that your empire is illogical because it cannot endure. I submit that you are illogical to be a willing part of it.
You have 1 minute and 23 seconds.
If change is inevitable, predictable, beneficial, doesn't logic demand that you be a part of it?
One man cannot summon the future.
But one man can change the present. Be the captain of this enterprise, Mr. Spock. Find a logical reason for sparing the Halkins and make it stick. Push till it gives. You can defend yourself better than any man in the fleet. Captain, get in the chamber!
Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge,
this is Tyler Orton, looking for some new IP.
And this week, we have a very special conundrum. Give this episode a sequel.
Yeah, Cam, essentially, there are some episodes that are just screaming for a follow-up here. And it's interesting with regards to certain series that kind of became more serialized. And we often would get follow-ups, though. But there are some dangling threads, or there are just some exceptional episodes. And you're like, you know what? I see the perfect opportunity to do a bit of a sequel to this, and they never jumped on it. So I think we'll be doing a lot of hypotheticals here, so bear with us, but this is going to be fun. We're going to be going to like a lot of cool episodes and maybe kind of playing around with what would work with a sequel for them.
I got one question for you, Tyler.
Yeah.
What of Lazarus?
I don't need to know the answer to that.
What of Lazarus?
Okay. Well, Cam, why don't we kick it off strong? You begin.
Okay. Well, I'll just start. You know, I referenced an original series episode that I'm not going to reference again for this entire episode. but one that I think really stands out to me as something that had a lot of avenues for future storytelling in the original series is Mirror, Mirror.
Oh, that was actually on my list. That was going to be my first one.
Okay. Yeah,
let's get into it, the both of us.
You know, we see at the end of Mirror, Mirror, the original crew, the Prime crew, is going back, but they've put the seeds in Mirror Universe's Spock's head that, hey, maybe you should overthrow, you know, the powers that be and use this Tantalus field weapon potentially to do so. And what happens?
Well, we did kind of find out with regards to the intendant, Kira. She gave us an exposition bomb when we were introduced to the Mirror Universe in Deep Space Nine. And essentially, it sounds as if Spock's reforms were a bit of a failure there.
Yes.
And that is actually fascinating, though, to kind of see the downfall of the Terran Empire. Like, watching these jerks, and let's be honest, like everything we've encountered with them, whether it's Discovery or if it's TOS, we know from this era, humans are just pieces of garbage at this point.
But just think of the opportunities we could have had in the original series to have Spock play this really active role in an episode as opposed to exposition through Kira. I would have loved to have seen that. You've still got Sulu running around. We get to see more of Barbarian Kirk, who is barely even a character in Mirror, Mirror. What happens when he goes back?
He's just screaming the whole time.
I just think there's so many cool things that could have happened.
Well, I would also think, like, if we could have, you know, Mirror Spock and Prime Spock interacting with each other, that would play off each other so well. Are you surprised, though, they never... It's such an iconic episode, and they never did it with, say, the animated series. They had Trouble with Tribbles follow-up with More Tribbles, or More Tribbles, More Trouble, but...
Also, a Shore Leave sequel, Once Upon a Planet. Yeah,
so Shore Leave is getting a sequel, but Mirror, Mirror is not in the animated series.
Was it too adult-themed for a kid's animated show, maybe?
Would it, would the characters just have to be doing way too many bad things that it just be too problematic for it to be geared towards kids?
It is weird, though, and I was going through the list of Memory Alpha of developed Star Trek script ideas for all the various series, just to see kind of what had been thought up before, to see if there was anything that jumped out to me as, oh, that is an episode I hadn't have thought about. And I didn't really see anything for the original series referencing any more follow-ups in Mirror, Mirror. Not even like they were, hey, what about that idea? It's like it really was kind of a one and done.
Yeah.
And it's a bummer because I do think you could have had a really fun original series episode, maybe in season 3, when they're struggling. Like, why did we not get that? You could even do it as a bottle episode on another Enterprise.
Well, it's just funny. I think there's really only two episodes that got sequels from TOS. Of course, Space Seed in the form of Wrath of Khan.
Yeah.
And then the Tholian Web in the form of Inamir Darkly from Enterprise. And
I mean, kind of the Harry Mudd stuff, I guess.
Oh, yeah. You know, well...
It's not really sequels, though. It's just the continuation of a character.
I don't think it's by the definition that we're using for a sequel. Because
right.
Then we could say that there's been, like, what, 100 sequels on Deep Space Nine.
Sure.
You know, just because it's recurring characters. But I think we're talking kind of thematically and story level to a certain degree. But those are the two examples that pop out to me anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't I jump over to the aforementioned Deep Space Nine? This is one I struggled with initially when I was kind of brainstorming ideas for it because it's so serialized. And mm-hmm. a lot of those threads there, well, it's like, yeah, you would go there. But I was like, you know what? These standalone episodes, they're always kind of planting seeds for interesting ideas, and Deep Space Nine often kind of stayed away from the high concept stuff and was more focused on character beats.
Say no more, Tyler. I, too, want a sequel to The Storyteller.
Oh, I was thinking actually Meridian.
What happens when they come back?
Well, it's a 60-year cycle, so we just have to wait, what, another 40 years? And
wait, is that the Picard spinoff?
Oh, that would be amazing. No, I actually went with, you might kind of go, huh, but I went with Little Green Men. This is
actually was one that popped out to me when okay. I was going through the episodes.
And I was like, this is the one where, you know, they're mistaken for the Roswell aliens, the three Ferengi when they accidentally crash land. Well, no, they're not mistaken for the Roswell aliens. They are, in fact, the Roswell aliens because of time travel. That's what we find out during this their efforts to get Nog to Starfleet Academy.
Right.
This is a fun, high concept episode. It plays into both Earth mythology and it also plays into, I guess, kind of the Ferengi fun stories that I think a lot of people enjoy, depending. I mean, your mileage may vary on the Ferengis here.
Well, I think a lot of people don't like maybe the Ferengi Ferenginar episodes when you get to especially like maybe like Ferengi love songs, which is a good episode. But I think a lot of people could take or leave some of those types of Ferengi episodes or Prophet and Lace, obviously. But I do wonder if that would have been an interesting avenue is to kind of delve into Earth alien mythology by sending the Ferengi back on a time travel kind of mission or something. Like, what happens when they're in the counterculture or something like that? That would have been really fun stuff to do.
I was wondering, like, would we, if we got, like, hypothetical sequels to this, would we following them to, like, significant periods of human history? Does it have to be alien-related? What if they're mistaken for, like, Egyptian gods or something like that?
Like the ancient aliens, and this is who it was.
Yes!
With Quark and Rom.
Like, it would be...
Like,
it would
bumbling
be,
ancient aliens.
Yeah, it'd be, like, a lot of fun to follow up, like, in a well like that. Keep it loose, you know? And, look, I think it's a high-concept episode. How many times can you go to that well, realistically? Look, people, we're just having fun here. But I think that, you know, Deep Space Nine, that is kind of a challenge, but... Yeah, I was going through my list eventually, and I realized like I have a lot of like episodes that I actually think work quite well for sequel, just because mm-hmm. of how Deep Space Nine maybe dangled some of those plot threads in their standalones that weren't not always resolved when they're actually part of the larger mythology.
Well, I do think that you could have traded an episode like The Emperor's New Cloak for that idea. Like, I think maybe that one would have been more satisfying, or Prophet and Lace. I think we'd happily kick to the curb.
Yeah, you know, Emperor's New Cloak, we're just talking about the Mir stuff. It mm-hmm. is kind of disappointing. Like, that's the furthest we've gotten in the Star Trek timeline in terms of the Mir universe, in that there were so many other interesting things going on there. And
yeah.
I think that there seems as if there needed to be something a little bit more epic, mm-hmm. you know, than what we left off with here.
And I often think with the DS9 one-off kind of fun episodes, like Take Me Out to the Holosuite or Our Man Bashir, I think it's fun when they just do something really poppy and vibrant.
Yep.
And that would be another good excuse for them to throw in another one of those with the Ferengi, where it didn't necessarily rely on Ferengi mythology, which I think did lose people. I don't know. Like, I enjoy the Ferengi stuff, so I'm partial to it, but I can totally understand how a lot of people did not enjoy those episodes.
I appreciate the Ferengi stuff so much more now, but it took like 20 years for me to actually... appreciate it, though.
At the time when you were watching DS9, you know, you're tuning in on whatever night it aired, and the episode pops up. If it was a Ferengi one, were you like, oh?
Yeah. I think I remember having that reaction the first time I watched House of Quark. But, mm-hmm. I mean, I remember liking it at the time. But remember, it came off of The Search Parts 1 and 2, which is a very explosive premiere.
Yeah.
And you followed up with House of Quark. It is a bit of a different... pace, so to say.
Yeah, like I just remember as a kid when you would tune into a sitcom. For me, like I watched a lot of sitcoms growing up, and you would tune into one, and you would be fooled by the first like 3 or 4 minutes, and suddenly it turned into a recap episode.
Oh my God!
And you would just be like, "Oh no, oh no!"
Like you were,
and they
bitter.
Would fool you in the teasers for the episode and everything,
or like the previews, like the week before.
Yeah,
you know. Yeah. Oh, that made me so bitter all the time.
Yeah, and you would watch it nonetheless.
Yeah, the last clip show I ever actually saw on broadcast TV was 30 Rock.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting because I think like maybe 2 or 3 weeks earlier, Community was on the same night. It was on the same channel. And they had done the subversion of a clip episode where everybody had like, hey guys, remember when?
Right.
And you're like, oh my God, is this going to be a clip show? And then they actually had all these brand new scenes that actually kind of filled in the mythology as well. So right. They did something so subversive. And they followed a few weeks later on 30 Rock. With an actual clip show? I was like, people still make these now? Like, I was just like, come on, guys. Like,
yeah.
You can't do that.
My favorite was the second episode of Clerks, the animated series,
yeah.
Which did all these clips of the first episode. They
would
just
really?
Be like, remember when? And it would just show a clip of the one episode that existed.
See, that's pretty funny.
It was pretty funny.
Yeah. Okay, Cam, let's throw it back to you, sir.
Okay, well, you know, jumping off of DS9, this is a character we've talked about in the past, and I think it's important to acknowledge this episode and say there damn well should have been a sequel to this. And that's the episode Defiant with Thomas Riker.
Yeah, yeah.
We see at the end he's handed over to be in a Cardassian prison. Kira says, I'm going to get you out. Don't worry. We never hear of this character ever again.
I remember the message boards that Ron Moore would post on. Mm-hmm. People were bugging him about this nonstop. And he's like, oh, yeah, oh, yeah. And then nothing ever happened.
Yeah.
You know, it's very disappointing because it's a character that we're invested in automatically because it's portrayed by one Jonathan Frakes.
Yeah.
He's also coming off of like a very strong TNG episode. Like Second Chances was a great episode.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this just kind of calls out like we need a conclusion of this trilogy here, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just such a bummer. It would have been perfect for, you know, something to happen during the Dominion War. You're telling me Frakes would not have been able to find time in his calendar, like, to get this in? He was directing Deep Space Nine. I think this would have been, like, a good follow-up show, Cam.
Like, I know Frakes has said, you know, he'd pitched ideas for a follow-up, and, like, the idea had floated around. Was it perhaps that, like, kind of post-season 3 that DS9 was just like, we want to be our own show, we are not relying on TNG stuff? Because they'd obviously done the Q episode, I think, in season 2, is it?
Season one.
Okay. Yeah. But like they'd done these kind of episodes that relied on TNG characters and putting that in their marketing. And did they just kind of want to be like, no, we're doing our own thing. We don't want to go back to that. Well,
but why did they bring him on the show in the first place though?
Different line of thinking, season 3 versus season 4 onwards. I have no idea. Like to it doesn't make sense. I'm just trying to understand why they wouldn't do it.
My best guess though is they just couldn't come up with an idea that they were happy with. I think just creatively, they're like, do we want to do something just to check a box, or would we rather be inspired by what we're doing?
Do you wish there had been an episode where they were just like, you know, a random episode in the Dominion War, they were like, the camp was there, Thomas Riker was there. Well, I guess everyone's gone now.
Yeah, who exactly is having this conversation? It's like, what, Kira and who?
Garrick?
I don't know. No, it's like nobody else knows who Tom Riker is,
yeah.
You know?
Well, that's so, why Garrick just stares blankly at her.
Yeah, because I think O'Brien, he was gone by Second Chances, right?
Yeah.
And, well, actually, no, Worf. I guess Worf would have known who Tom Riker is. So there you go. Kira and Worf scene for the ages.
Right.
You know, well, it's, talking about TNG, though, why don't we go off to that series? And I don't know. We can have a bit of a debate about this one here and whether or not this one actually did get a sequel.
Okay.
I-Borg. Of course, we have kind of the big setup about what individuality could eventually do to the Borg Collective, and they touched on that thread with regards to Descent.
Yeah.
And then that thread was just completely dropped in the First Contact Onward era of the Borg, though.
Yeah.
Cam, do you think we are actually getting a sequel to I-Borg with the upcoming Star Trek Picard series?
I mean, why bring back Hugh if you're not going to touch on those themes?
I think it's and because I think when we're pitching kind of the sequel idea, it's either like a very strong storyline or it's a very strong kind of thematic sort of deal that we want to have addressed here. And I think this is going to be doing it in a way that we did not get with Descent, where it seemed almost like, I don't want to say throwaway, but it there seemed as if there's a promise that was never fulfilled with regards to what went down in I, Borg. And I think it deserves a follow-up here. And I think if you're putting Jonathan DeLarco in pretty much all the promotional stuff that they've been doing so far, I guess we're getting a bit of a sequel, but it's not going to feel like a sequel the way that we think of it nowadays, because Picard's going to be like serialized 10-hour sort of extravaganza. So I get it, but I don't know. I'm excited about this decision haunting Picard, because one of the best scenes in the Drumhead was when Admiral Gene Simmons, you know,
rock and roll all night.
Yeah. When she confronted him about his decision and was making him like a Borg sympathizer to a certain degree. And that was powerful. And if that's haunting him, almost 30 years later at this point, that's going to be great to watch.
The thing I find interesting about this Borg story is, like, I, Borg is a fantastic episode.
You can.
But if you're going to do this story, like, is the Borg, like, gaining their own individual independence an interesting, like, end goal for a Borg story? Is that what people want from the Borg?
I think people want some sort of like finality with the Borg.
Yeah.
I think we're kind of ready to put them away. And that's
they ever put them away? Like, they're one of the most marketable aliens in Star Trek.
Yeah. But then the thing is, like, if we keep watching them get their butts kicked all the time, then it's like, well, are they actually all that interesting to watch? And that's why I think I'm very pleased to know that maybe Jeri Ryan is for sure involved with this, because she's another one of those Borg drones that received her individuality. And so she's got something to add here. It's really going to come down to whether they're going to be able to bring back Icheb, you know?
Exactly. I think that's the one that fans have been waiting for.
That and the little school children that they briefly had in the Delta Quadrant.
Did they even explain what happened to them?
Yeah, they said we found some distant relatives or something like that. It was very like tossed away.
It sounds like code for just like dropped off on an asteroid somewhere.
It was just weird because I think those kids were in like 3 or 4 episodes.
Yeah, that's about right.
Because I think they were in the Haunting of Deck 12 still by that point. Like, that's like Neelix was telling the stories to Naomi, Icheb, and I think at least two other, like the twins, right?
My memory is, and it may be faulty
because
it's been a while, but I feel like there was in the episode with the Borg children, there was like maybe 5.
Yeah.
And then I think they cut it down to like 3 or something in like an episode or so.
Well, I remember there was like an infant that they found, and I think the infant was like given away to a family by the end of the episode.
Okay.
So they definitely were already kind of slimming down the pickings right there.
It was too many Borg children.
Too many Borg children, yeah. So that to me is like a TNG episode that just kind of screams, give it a sequel.
Right. Okay, well.
And Galaxy's Child.
More Space Whales. We got Space Whales.
Yeah, that's true.
We got the prequel. Now, speaking about the Borg, that reminds me of Voyager. So I'm going to jump to Voyager. And the problem with Voyager and sequels is that the way the show is structured, they are traveling home, so they're leaving space behind. But I do think they could have found a way to bring back the character of D'Vor Inspector Kashyyyk.
Okay.
Because I just feel like...
From Counterpoint,
exactly. Yeah. You have this character, and in that one, for those that don't remember that episode, it's the one where they have to hide the dock because holograms aren't allowed in that area of D'Vor space. And it's this real back and forth between...
Well, it's actually telepaths.
Telepaths, am I saying? What's the other one with the holograms?
There is one with holograms.
There is. It's Body and Soul. That's what I'm getting it mixed up with. Yeah, Body and Soul. Yeah, sorry. It's the, yes. But anyways, so they have to, have this back and forth between Janeway and this guy who's like almost like the Hans Landa in some way.
Well, he's convinced like that they were like stowaways.
Yes.
And then he like... turned tail, he's like, oh, can I take refuge on your ship now? I don't agree with this. And it's like this great cat and mouse game between him and Janeway.
Yes.
The two actors had this great chemistry
as
well, you know? And you're right, like, this totally deserved a return of this fella here somehow, some way, and I think they could have figured that out easily.
I think there's a really easy way. It's that, like, he failed. Somehow they discovered that Voyager had tricked them.
Yeah.
He got cut loose or knocked out of his placement in society, winds up back on Voyager the next season. Like, I do think...
What do you think he's doing at that point?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe he's like the outrageous Okona.
Okay, sure.
He's grown a ponytail, and he's just like, I'm just here to look good.
Yeah.
But I just think when you have that sort of chemistry with Kate Mulgrew, where it's just like crackling, I have to believe if Voyager was produced now, that character would be back. They would be like, we have something here. We need to exploit this further.
Yeah, I'm down with that. You know, because I think the Janeway love interest sort of deal was lacking at times, mm-hmm. you know, and Mulgrew was very adamant, like, look, I'm the captain. There can't be this power imbalance if I'm, you know, getting it on with a crew member, you know, sure. and that was totally valid. So as you say, Cam, if they're just bouncing around on the way home, how do you have like a consistent love interest that's not a hologram there?
Right.
So,
and you have this guy show up in the odd episode, and it's kind of like he could be your kind of like your Harry Mudd fly in the ointment character who pops in, but he's got this amazing chemistry with Kate Mulgrew. They kind of duel back and forth. He takes off, comes back another episode. I just think there would have been ways to kind of, especially a guy like this who seems like such like a opportunistic type guy. Like it feels like he's someone who could easily involve himself in different types of situations.
Yeah. In terms of opportunistic, you know, guys, why don't we jump over to an Enterprise pick here?
I thought you were going to say, what of Lazarus?
And I thought you said you're never going to mention that.
I lied.
I want to jump over to Mistral. Of course, the Vulcan featured in Carbon Creek, who decided to stay behind on planet right. Earth, you know, back in the 1950s. I just would love to pop in once a season, see him on kind of this episodic adventure, I don't know, hitting the railways, like finding new, almost like Kung Fu or Incredible Hulk, you know, like getting pushed out of towns, you know, wherever he goes. Like,
I am Mistral. I will help you.
You know, it'd be fun to see him like kind of almost like a Forrest Gump sort of thing, like how he's unwittingly inserting himself into big historic events, you know, like I think this...
Running long distances.
Yes. and I...
Cataloging like U.S. history.
He becomes a war hero. Yeah. You know, he's operating a shrimp boat.
Sure.
Captain Joan. But like, I think this would be like, he was a fun character who was a Vulcan who really did embrace like humanity. And we got the sense by the end of Enterprise that secretly deep down, Vulcans really do genuinely enjoy humans.
They
you know?
Must.
They have to. Like, you, even Saval was saying it, like, do you think I'd be on Earth for this long if I didn't have some sort of affinity for it? You know?
Right.
And I, one of my favorite lines, though, is like, Archer's like, well, you hide it quite well. And he said, thank you. You know, so I think the Vulcans had an interesting journey on Enterprise. And they definitely changed and developed as we knew them. And I think Mistral was like just a fun character. And I would love to kind of pop back in after I think Carbon Creek deserves a sequel, Cam.
What is that sequel? Is it just like an episode just focused just on his character on Earth?
I think it has to be. Yeah. You know, it's just it's a one-off. It's almost like 1159 from Voyager, you know, just one of those one-off episodes. We did Off the Beaten Path, you know, yeah. a couple months ago, and I think it might have to be just one of those Off the Beaten Path episodes.
But they would want that episode to feature, I feel like, an Enterprise regular cast member.
I'll pitch it to you, Cam. Because that episode, it featured, Carbon Creek featured T'Pol's grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
Why not have, like, the ancestors of some of our main cast members? Like, I know it sounds cheesy.
No, I'm following you here. Yeah. I get the vibe. I'm liking it.
You know, but, like, 1950s, like, Malcolm Reed kind of great-great-great-grandfathers, you know. He's a Navy man or something.
Like wearing the old-timey Navy gear from Generations.
Yeah.
People just keep getting thrown off boats every 5 minutes.
Like, yeah, Mistral keeps knocking them in.
Then they have to explain why that's not funny.
Yeah. Or, you know, we can watch, we can finally see Scott Bakula play water polo because his ancestors
invent water polo.
Invent water polo. Yeah, you know.
Sure.
I think there'd be kind of some fun opportunities to insert main cast members in.
I feel like that was kind of set in the heartland of America. They might throw in like a Tucker.
Oh, yeah.
You know, ancestor. Yeah. That would make a lot of sense.
But you're telling me that Mistral wouldn't want to travel the entire world? I'm sure he dropped in on, like, say, Japan and could sure. have met up with Hoshi's, you know, family. Like, I think they're a lot of opportunities there.
Let's be honest. They weren't going to write Hoshi into that episode.
No. You're thinking that they're actually going to go film on location in Japan. They have to recreate 1960s Tokyo, like, all for this. Maybe not. Maybe I'm getting a little too far ahead of myself.
I feel like with Enterprise, it would have been the triumvirate. It would have either been Bakula, you know, Jolene Blaylock or...
Connor Trinneer.
Yeah, Connor Trinneer.
Yeah. Yeah.
The other one's probably not likely.
Okay. Well, Kim, back at you, man.
Okay. Well, I want to do a Enterprise one, too. And this one, I don't know that I... Some of them fall into categories where I'm like, it's not something I would have thought I wanted. But then I read, like, quotes or something where I said, like, wow, they're really passionate about this idea. I would have liked to have seen this. And this really comes from Manny Coto, talking about the hypothetical season 5 of Enterprise, how he was desperate to do a sequel to the Cloudminders, or I suppose a prequel.
Right, right, right.
And I mean, Cloudminders, that's season 3 of the original series, where it's kind of this, you know, the rich are above ground, and then you kind of have the below ground poor. And, you know, it's not an episode when, and we talked about it in Hidden Gems, I believe, it's not an episode that I ever was like, well, I really want to go back to Stratos. Like, that really does seem like a great story. Until, like,
the name of that planet is very on the nose, by the way. Anyway.
But, like, Manny Coto was so obsessed with it, and he just really wanted to do the sequel. And I'm like, I guess I kind of want to see this. Like, he seems excited. So I'm like, what would he have done to enrich in the world? Because I look at season 4 Enterprise, like, what they're doing with the Andorians, what they're doing with the Tellarites, what they're doing with the Mirror Universe. What would he have done with the Cloudminders world?
Do you think it's maybe kind of he's showing off, like, the impetus for this caste system to have developed the way it did?
I believe he would. That was the general germ of the idea, yeah.
So that would have been interesting.
Yeah.
You know, like, no, I would have been fascinated by whatever he was going to bring to the table there.
Because I feel like most of the time, if you ask a Star Trek writer what original series episode they want to do some sort of prequel sequel to, you're going to hear Mirror, Mirror.
Spectre of the Gun.
Sure. Trials and Tribulations. You're going to hear kind of, like, the bigger ones, or... You're not going to hear someone mention the Cloudminders.
Yeah.
And I just think that would have been... The fact that he would pick such an obscure episode tells me that he had something that he was really interested in doing.
And I'll just jump in because we are podcast hosts, but I believe you meant to say The Trouble with Tribbles. Because
Trials and Tribulations.
Yeah, that was, in fact, a sequel.
That's true.
Actually, I guess that should be included in those sequels that I listed for TOS earlier on, though. That is a very direct sequel. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Cam, next up.
Or is it a sidequel?
Well, that's actually a very good question. Yeah. It's almost like Endgame to a certain degree, right?
Yeah.
And I should say Avengers Endgame, not Voyager Endgame.
I thought you meant Highlander Endgame.
Okay, yeah. My apologies there. Cam, why don't I go to Voyager, though? This is one that, like, I was kind of thinking, does it actually deserve a sequel, or is there just, like, some rich stupidity to mine from it? I want to know what happened to the salamander babies from Threshold.
Yeah, like that I does this might come up.
That does haunt me, and that, like, it irked me when I watched this episode. I was just like, they're just gonna leave, like, these babies on the planet and not do anything with them.
Right.
There's got to be, like, another off the beaten path sort of episode where you have, I don't know, this rapid growth, and all of a sudden you can pretty much get, like, Robert Duncan McNeil and Kate Mulgrew to be playing their own children, like, you know, or, you know, like something like that.
Although, weren't they, like, kind of like four-legged creatures by the end of that episode?
They were, but maybe something sets them off and they turn into, like, where their DNA is kind of unleashed somehow,
well,
you know.
They were, like, evolving or devolving into lizards. Would they have human DNA, the babies?
Oh, yeah, because, again, we talked about it before. Star Trek still doesn't seem to grasp what the concept of evolution is.
Yeah.
But the idea was that by going through Warp 10, humanity was evolving at a faster pace. And so these babies, it's human DNA in them. It's directly from the line of Paris and Janeway, and that's how they were able to reverse back into their forms that we know them as. So I think there could have been, like, something fun going on here. I don't know how the logistics of it. I think it has to be some other aliens, like, encounter these beings that are giving some weird bio signs, and they investigate aboard their own ship after taking them aboard, and they somehow turn them back into, like, humans, and it turns out they look identical to Paris and Janeway. And I think that would be fun.
I think that would be an episode that might have possibility if anyone liked that episode.
could it be the episode that redeems Threshold? It is one of the most, you know, iconic episodes of Star Trek just because of how bad it was. But, you know, we actually we've come to kind of like it as, like, one of those kind of, like, it's so nutty, it's actually kind of, like, fun to watch.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely more fun to watch than, like, some of the other, like really middle-of-the-road kind of weak episodes.
Yeah.
Like, Threshold is crazy. I mean, You know, they did make that sequel to Demon, where they did The Course Oblivion.
Yeah.
I mean, that was fantastic, and Demon's not a very good episode.
Yeah.
So maybe the sequel to Threshold could have been, like, great, because I really, really liked Course Oblivion.
How fun would it have been for, like, if they have to do Previously on Star Trek Voyager, and it's all to Threshold, and the audience must just be pulling their hair out going, like, what? What?
And I want, like, flashbacks throughout where they just cut back to those lizards and making clicking sounds.
Much like Hoshi did on Broken Bow when she was in Brazil teaching languages. Yeah,
I think that would have been incredible.
All right. We're down for Threshold, man.
Yeah. Another one that I think demanded a follow-up, and it's a TNG episode, but I don't think it would have been in TNG, but it's the episode Preemptive Strike, which occurs near the end of Season 7. This is where we bid farewell to Ro Laren, who heads off to join the Maquis, and we never get any sort of follow-up to that journey. And yeah. I mean, there's other characters who could go join the Maquis, and we'd go, okay, like, no big deal. They were a character of the week or something. Like Bernie Casey, you know, showed up in that episode, you know, and went off with the Maquis. And you're like, if I never heard what was going on with that character, my life's fine. But I feel like with Ro Laren, a character who has this huge fan base, it really stings to not, you know, cover that.
She was so built up in Season 5.
Yeah.
And I think we got one episode of her in Season 6.
Yeah.
And you're like, she just kind of fizzled out there, because I think it was really Michelle Forbes just wasn't interested. And, you know, I appreciated her coming back to kind of close off the character, but I don't know. They could have done something more. Just give her one more episode to drop in on Deep Space Nine in, like, Season 3 or 4 or something like that.
Well, I mean, they wanted her to be, one of the leads on Deep Space Nine. It didn't really work out. So we got Kira instead, which did really work out. It was awesome. But, I mean, I would have loved to have had her brought into an episode and give us some sort of idea of, like, a resolution to this character, because the Maquis are, like, wiped out, so are we just to assume that this character is gone?
I guess so, and that's, like, really depressing to hear. Yeah. Like, that's the end of her.
For this, like, really fiery character who was so entertaining on TNG. I was not surprised, just doing the research, just, like, how many books and comics and Star Trek Online have tried to map out where this character would go in the future. The sheer amount of it just shows you how beloved this character was, and that, you know, all these people have these outlets to express these, you know, obsessive wantings to know for this sort of information, can express it there, but they're exploring the same questions we all are, and are probably as frustrated as we are with an episode like Preemptive Strike, which isn't great, and you're like, well, goodbye, I guess.
Do you imagine, okay, let's play with it. Let's say hypothetically survives the wiping out of the Maquis.
Yeah.
What is she doing in the Star Trek Picard era at this point? Like, what is her journey ultimately? Because every single institution that she gets invested in just keeps kind of crumbling beneath her feet. You know, where does this character land at this point?
Isn't that what makes her compelling, though?
It does,
She doesn't belong wherever she goes, but she's always searching for, a structure to belong to. And I think
the Borg Collective.
She's like, I am a Borg. It's like, you haven't been assimilated yet. Yeah, I think that would be great, like, to just have her not joining the Borg, but just, like, showing up in other, like, in another show, like, kind of Lost, and how she's finding her way. Like, I think that would be a really compelling character.
My biggest fear, though, is, like, they're like, yeah, let's bring back Ensign Ro. Hey, guess what? She's a captain in Starfleet now. And I just think that would be such a cop-out for the character, though.
Kind of like the Wesley showing up in Nemesis in a uniform, where you're just kind of like, oh,
that, okay. That doesn't ring true for the character to me at all. Just like you said with the Wesley thing. It's just kind of like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, like I have a hard time imagining them bringing her back into Picard and just being like, telling this, like, very, like, brand new Ro story.
I know.
I know. I would love to see it, but I don't think it's going to happen.
The actress doesn't want to do it, so they have to hire the actress who played her in Rascals. Who is actually quite good. So.
Is she? What has she done since?
No.
Oh, you're talking about back then. Back in Rascals. Okay, I thought she'd, like, grown up into some TV icon that I just wasn't aware of.
J-Lo.
Wow.
I don't know if that was... I don't think it was J-Lo.
We can hope.
Yeah. Anyway, Cam, next up on my list here. Okay. Deep Space Nine didn't always do high concept, but when they did, they made sure that it was fun. And, okay, so we got one little ship. Mm-hmm. What if we did something like One Big Station? Like, I don't know, just like kind of, what if instead of a group of characters like shrinking, we had, let's say Quark and Odo start like growing and growing, like Honey, I Blew Up the Kids style. Like, sure. There'd be some great promenade sequences. It would be prohibitively expensive. Yeah. But like, it's like, you know, Jadzia or O'Brien could be like, huh, we've been there before. But in reverse, like, I think this could be like some comedy gold somehow, obviously constrained by like kind of the laws of physics to a certain degree. And I do wonder what kind of the dramatic tension is going to be other than like, hey, am
I going to break through the ceiling of the station?
Well, yeah, you know, it'd be kind of like a fun high concept follow up that is like a sequel in spirit for sure.
OK, let's workshop this. What character is the one that it should happen to?
I think Quark. Like,
you think Quark, okay. Yeah.
You know, and I know it's kind of like easy to say, but he is like the shortest, you know, character mm-hmm. on there. Okay, so I think like it's an adventure with Quark, and there's got to be at least one or two others because like they have to be facing kind of the same dilemma.
I feel like you want to torture O'Brien.
Okay.
Like O'Brien would be fun. He has been shrunk, okay. But I think it would be fun to have him getting bigger and bigger.
So that's his annual Torture O'Brien episode. Comedy gold with him and Keiko once again. Because Keiko, she's been shrunk before in Rascals.
Yeah.
So there you go. Now it's kind of a reversal of fortunes.
Right.
Do you think they reminisced about when he was shrunk in One Little Ship? And
how does that not come up like every week?
Yeah, I know. They're like, we really should have like more of a boring life on Earth, shouldn't we, people?
Right.
Yeah. Okay, so O'Brien, Quark.
Who we need a third, I think.
Third. Do you think Sisko, I think, would he be curmudgeon-y or like what do you think his reaction? Or do you think there's somebody else that maybe lends itself to more comedy?
Well, let's see.
Maybe like a recurring character.
Because I'm thinking out of these ones, you've got like the kind of the comedy relief in Quark. O'Brien's sort of your everyman. So, like, what kind of personality type do we want to fill this out? It might be fun to have, like, a Worf who's definitely going to give those sorts of, like, Klingon, like, reactions to this indignities.
Maybe he would love it.
Maybe.
No one can defeat him in battle.
Maybe.
Yeah. The other one that I'll pitch is Bashir. If only because if anyone's going to fix this problem, maybe it needs to be the medical doctor. And what happens if he can't push buttons or uses tools or, you know, like that adds to some of the dramatic tension.
Oh, okay. So who's the character he's talking through the medical processes?
Oh, okay.
Garrick? That might be fun for Andy Robinson.
Yeah, I could picture that for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, or Nog, you know.
Nog would be good too.
I think this would be...
Or if you really want comedy gold, Rom. Where they're having to talk Rom through, like, inputting, like, very, very delicate medical protocol into a computer.
I know what we call the episode now.
Moogie!
I blew up the kids. Yeah. Okay. Off to you, Cam.
I don't know how I follow that up, but I'll try. Okay, so I referenced the episode Demon earlier from Voyager. I want to jump over to Demons from Enterprise, which is the Demons Terra Prime story. In that, we get Section 31 showing up, this character Harris, who's, you know, operates in the shadows, and he gives Reed info to kind of help him out with this plot that Terra Prime has going, and he says that this information is going to come at a price that will be exacted at a later time. ... Show's canceled.
Yeah.
And we never follow up on this, and... Like, I wasn't super crazy about Section 31 on Enterprise. It wasn't done in a way that I thought was particularly fascinating. But I would have been interested to see, like, how this would have affected the Reed character. Because it's not like Reed got a lot of showcase episodes. And I think it would have been an interesting opportunity in a Season 5 to see more of his relationship with Section 31 and see how they are going to grow into the Section 31 we see in DS9, because at this point, Discovery is not a thing that exists. And so we really are bridging the gap at this point.
Yeah, and Reed is a man who proved himself more loyal to Archer than, say, Harris.
Yes.
And I think that's kind of an interesting thing, but I think Reed would recognize if he can get something out of this relationship, then, mm-hmm. you know, why don't I take it and see if I can further the goals of my captain and crew there. It seems as if, like, Reed is one of those characters that's had so much more potential than they often gave him.
Yeah.
And I wish he got a stronger outing with the Section 31 stuff than we did see. I think there's still potential to mine here for an ongoing relationship.
Yeah, because, you know, you look at what Reed got to do in Season 3 with, like, the Mako stuff, which was really fantastic. And Season 4, like, he had some moments, but it wasn't, like, a heavy Reed season. But with like Manny Coto bringing in Section 31, like I have to believe, again, this guy knows Star Trek super well. And the fact that he's dropping breadcrumbs for Section 31 having a continued presence on the show, I think he would have done some interesting things had he gotten to season 5.
Yeah, I mean, what kind of... Okay, so we would have been getting close to, you know, the birth of the Federation here.
Yeah.
Inserting themselves in a way that makes it... I don't want to call the Federation, like, poisoned, but, like, the influence of Section 31 is there from the get-go. And what does that spell for this alliance? Maybe this Section 31 is actually integral to the formation of the permanent alliance between these founding planets.
Right. Yeah. Like, that would have been really interesting.
Okay.
And kind of see the moment where they really, really go underground.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Much like in Cloudminders. Yeah. Cam, we'll go to TNG again for me, and this was one that I kind of struggled with in what we should do this, but Lower Decks, you know, because we had some interesting characters, some less interesting as well, but the Cito Jaxa story, it sounds like cruel, like her ultimate fate here. It's like her senior officers pressure her into pretty much going into a suicide mission.
Yeah.
Does she deserve better than this, Cam? Is there room, or would it take away from how strong this episode is? Just think about like Patrick Stewart doing that last line at the, when he's doing the announcement, telling everybody that they've lost a crew member. That's one of the most powerful scenes in TNG.
Right.
But I feel like Cito Jaxa deserves better at this point, and there might be room for her to maybe have turned up in a Cardassian prison camp.
Well, I read, I think it was Ron Moore, correct me if I'm wrong, it was like a DS9 writer for sure, I'm pretty sure it was Ron Moore, talking about how they flirted with bringing that character into Deep Space Nine, and they just realized that, like, the character had such an amazing exit in Lower Decks that they felt bad about wrecking that, and a lot of what that episode was became Hard Time with O'Brien, and that it was going to be her in this prison camp, like, killing her cellmate. And then that became the most depressing O'Brien episode of all time.
Sure.
And so, like, I kind of share your opinion in that, like, Cito Jaxa was an amazing character. And I
would have
liked
wanted to see a Cito Jaxa scream at Molly O'Brien, right?
Yeah. Who doesn't?
Yeah.
But, I mean, I would have loved to have seen more of that character. But was the exit too good?
I think maybe the exit was too good.
Yeah.
But it's still, like, there's got to be, like, fan fiction out there, follow-ups.
I'm sure of it.
I'm sure. I wonder if somebody, whether it's like kind of like official authors, maybe somebody cracked the code somehow, actually did find like a really good way to bring her in that did not undermine like that fantastic conclusion to Lower Decks.
Yeah.
You know? Like I just feel almost bitter about like how she met her maker though. You know, it's kind of like, oh, guys, I mean, powerful stuff you're doing here, but ouch.
What about the other characters in Lower Decks? Are there any that you wonder about whatever happened to them?
Yeah, Ben the bartender. Still playing cards with the main crew.
Yeah. Oh, Ben, we love you. Yeah, like, I guess the other ones, I mean, we know what happened with Ogawa. I mean, she's still on TNG, you know, as far as we know. But, well, not maybe in this at this point in time going to Picard, but, you know, she was around. What about the other two, though?
Yeah, I mean, so we had, like, Tarek, who he was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting to see him really get on Geordi's nerves, you know. Sam was the other fella.
Yeah.
I was higher on him than you were. I think you thought he was just a total uncharismatic, like, dope. But
right.
I think watching this man who is masking his own insecurities with this kind of bravado.
Yeah.
I thought it was very interesting. And honestly, I'd love to see another scene with him trying to small talk with one Commander Riker again.
Yeah.
That was such a fantastic, like, awkward scene there.
But also, like, TNG wasn't great about serialization, but, like, how does Cito Jax's fate affect him? Because I feel like he would have taken that incredibly hard, and how does that change him as a Starfleet?
One of the other good things, though, is that promotion that was coming up, and he's convinced the only reason he got it was because it was actually meant for Cito Jaxa.
Exactly,
You know, and like, so that's going to be something that's haunting him for a long time, you know?
Right.
All you can do is try to memorialize your friend by doing the best job possible in this new position. But, I mean, I think there's room for him to become a very compelling character.
When you watch that episode, do you think he goes on to become a captain? Do you think long-term he's a captain? Or do you think he's more like, you know, I don't know, like just a maybe a bridge officer, but not going all the way to the top?
I see him yeah, maybe being like a division head or something.
Right.
There's only so many ships to go around.
True.
Although I do remember when they established the size of the fleet on Star Trek Discovery, which is 100 years before TNG, I was like, that is a huge fleet. Like, just mammoth fleet. So I guess they need captains for all these ships. So there you go. Especially if, let's be realistic, the fleet's probably at least doubled in size, like, since the Discovery era. Mm-hmm. So, all right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Everyone gets a ship. You get a ship. You get a ship.
Yeah. Okay, well, one that I've got is, you know, I mistakenly referenced Trials and Tribulations a little while ago, mixing it up with The Trouble with Tribbles. But that episode, 30th anniversary of Star Trek, that's their DS9 entry. It's amazing. But we know that they had also developed the idea of a sequel to A Piece of the Action. Again, an episode that I never thought, yeah, I really need a sequel to that. But the idea that, you know, the Iotians on that planet had, in the time since the original series, become obsessed with the Federation. And we're going to build this entire, like, religion around the Federation. They were going to wear uniforms. And it was going to be somewhat of a commentary on Star Trek fandom. And it was interesting reading quotes about this episode, or this proposed episode, and how they said it was just too dangerous, man. Like, they really were worried it was going to offend, you know, Star Trek fans.
Okay.
And to me, that's what makes it fascinating and why I would love to see it. Like, why? Like, if it's dangerous.
I think you could have walked the line, though.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
And maybe it is a tough balancing act, but that makes me want to see it all the more. Like, the fact that they felt it had something that was a little bit edgy about it or a little bit daring makes me go, like, oh my God, what would that episode have been like? I mean, look, Trials and Tribulations is a pretty good consolation prize. One of the all-time great, you know, Star Trek episodes. But I would have loved to have seen what they would have done with a Piece of the Action follow-up.
I'll say this, though. USS Callister, the Black Mirror episode that was very much kind of an homage to explicitly Star Trek, but other sci-fi franchises as well. It was very much like a very incisive commentary on toxic fandom.
Yeah.
And I think it was embraced by a lot of Star Trek fans as
Definitely.
Well. And but
there was a lot of like people wanting a spinoff for that.
Yeah. So. But I do wonder if it does get problematic when it's not an outsized kind of franchise that is doing this sort of stuff.
Or like not a Galaxy Quest, it's an actual Star Trek
story. It really is. Yeah, and so it's like, wow, what do the creators actually think of the fans if this is what they're doing here? But I think if you can do it with love, I think it'll translate.
I think you totally could. I think you can get that sort of fish out of water comedy of these actual Star Trek characters walking into this quote-unquote fandom world, but also understanding the spirit of what they're doing it for and maybe recognizing the value in that at the end. Like, I do think there's a fun way to go about it where you get the comedy as well as basically communicate to the audience, like, we understand what you enjoy about us. I think it could have been done.
Now you have my brain stuck on the convention. Do you remember how, like, there's these people that dress up like the aliens that built the Galaxy Quest starship?
Yeah.
And they just kind of bounce around in character all day going, oh, hello, 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 and just opening doors for people.
Yeah.
Think about the energy that it takes to, like, stay in that character for, what, like 12 hours a day?
I couldn't do it for about 15 minutes.
Yeah.
I think that would be my breaking point.
I'm just saying, there's the writers have been to these Star Trek conventions.
Yeah.
They've got lots of, like, gold to mine there. Like, I think this could have been, like, a fun deal if they went for it.
But, like, you look at the movie Trekkies. I think Star Trek fans, by and large, really enjoyed that documentary.
Yeah.
And it's funny, but they also recognize the emotion and, you know, like, the goodwill behind what these fans are doing. So I totally think this A Piece of the Action story could have worked.
All right. I haven't tackled Voyager enough. I'll go back to that. The one that I keep thinking that they're these kind of off-the-beaten-path ones, you know, but I still think that Eye of the Needle, early season one episode where they find a wormhole, but the problem is the wormhole goes back in time like 18 years,
right?
Past letters to this Romulan captain, and then they find out, oh wait, the Romulan captain died before he would have ever been able to give the letters away.
It's a little bit like Sound of Her Voice.
Yeah.
In a way, yeah.
But I think it would have been fun to kind of follow that Romulan captain, who is known to be more of a scientific sort of fella. Just follow him on that journey for those, you know, interceding years to see whether or not we get an answer about whether those letters are passed on to family members or, you know, they don't want to mess with the timeline. But, I mean, we could have gotten some resolution to that with regards to, you know, the Pathfinder project. We would have been able to find out if those letters ever made it to the family. characters would have been at different points in their journey too. So it's like, oh, I'm 6 months into this journey where home is like, you know, 70 years away. Now I'm, you know, 6-7 years into this journey. I think it would have been kind of an interesting thing to like tackle here.
Was it Von Armstrong who played that character?
It was. It was so funny because like I'd seen Von Armstrong as like how many different aliens before. And then when he gets onto Enterprise and I'm seeing him sans makeup all the time as Admiral Force.
Yeah.
Now, whenever I see Von Armstrong as an alien, I'm like, oh, that's Von Armstrong, obviously. Yeah. It's super funny now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just think it's such a good episode, both thematically, and there's threads of a story that I think could have been picked up if they did a one-off. But, Cam, you bring up the age-old question, like, how do you insert kind of the main cast into something like this? I've got an idea.
Well, I mean, tying it to the Pathfinder would work.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Well, what if we have, you know, kind of a voiceover, or I know it's a bit of a movie cliche, but, like, we're watching the main cast members compose their letters to their family. And it's about this guy kind of like...
Discovery did that.
Yeah. And maybe it's about this Romulan captain kind of absorbing that and going with it and saying like how it affects his decisions as well as he's like reading through these letters and deciding how exactly he's going to get them to people in the right time, not knowing that his own fate is upon him at any moment. It's almost kind of like this tragedy that the audience is aware of, but he's not.
Mm-hmm. That would be interesting in how these letters maybe inform his journey over the course of that episode.
Yeah.
It's a little bit outside the box, maybe, for what Voyager would be willing to do. But I think it's an episode that maybe now someone might do.
I'm down for it.
I think that could have been really
good. I pitched it, so CBS, you owe me royalties if you ever pick it up.
Well, I'm going to make a selfish pitch now. And this is an episode that, maybe like Threshold, that no fans were like, I demand a sequel to this episode, but it's one that I would love to see. And that is a sequel to the Voyager episode Prototype.
Mm.
Because we see at the end, we have a robot war. And Janeway even acknowledging it as such. And to me, this episode, I love the robots in this, the android slash robots in this story. I would just love to explore this like weird world they create in this one episode of these warring factions of robots. And what is happening like over the course of this war? How does this evolve? Like, do they like improve themselves over time? I would have loved a return of these robots because the visual designs are incredible. And I just think like Voyager created something really quirky and interesting, at least to me, in that episode.
Yeah, I think that would have been a lot of fun. And it was like a character with like zero expressions.
Yeah.
But you got so much out of it just with, say, the voice work and even just the dialogue with kind of the simplicity there. Like you're invested in this. And he also liked how all the different robots kind of had like a monolithic look, but they're all kind of distinct from each other too. Mm-hmm. Like that was cool.
Yeah, like very much evoked Metropolis, the Fritz Lang film, but it was an aesthetic that I thought was really cool. And I just, again, that's the problem with Voyager. They just keep on moving. But I would have loved to have seen some sort of trip back there a couple years later. Like, where are they at now?
Yeah. You know, I'll do another one. Maybe we want to do a lightning round after this, just as we kind of close off. But,
sure.
Okay, Cam, you mentioned it. I just have to go with it, though. Take me out to the holosuite. I want Solok to come back.
Okay.
And this is a new competition that he pitches to Ben, and Ben cannot help himself.
Yeah.
And it totally goes with kind of like current kind of pop sort of culture.
Yeah.
Cooking contest. Like Solok and Sisko, how can Sisko say no to a cooking contest against Solok, who has been training his ass off for this?
Right.
It's Southern comfort versus Vulcan vegetarian. It is like a battle to the death here.
It would be held in Quarks.
Held
like
up,
with Quark as like your kind of your ringmaster slash game master.
Like he's
type.
The Iron Chef sort of there. Like it's going to be, it can be done with so much fun because you're playing around with all these like cooking competition show like sort of visuals that we're so familiar with right now. I mean, I think Ben Sisko needs more comedy episodes and comedy opportunities. I think this would be
move along
fun.
Home.
Yeah.
Set the bar so high.
Wow. But like he was not a very good coach to his team. So I think it would actually put him in a better position if it was a solo competition with him. So I just think that there's like a lot of potential fun here. I don't know. Like it sounds silly, but like Take Me Out to the Holosuite was like just such a fun episode. Again, off the beaten path, but they did it so well. Hey, Solok was kind of a dork, but like, bring him back. You know, just he got under Sisko's skin so badly.
Can't you totally picture Morn as one of the tasters?
Oh, I never even thought about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like spitting out platinum from his like fourth stomach, you know?
Like, you know that that would be a visual that they would love.
Oh, man. I'm totally down for that. Yeah. Boom. Cam, do we want to do a bit of a lightning
round?
Yeah,
I got a couple we can just do quickly. Okay. In a Mirror Darkly, two-parter of Enterprise. We're going to be tackling that in the coming months. But, I mean, with Empress Sato showing up at the end of that, how did we never get a follow-up story where we got to see her like really taking hold of the Empire? I think that would have been amazing.
Yeah. One for me, Sons of Moog. Look, Kern, he has his memory completely wiped. He gets like a plastic surgery to change his look because House of Moog is completely disgraced during the Klingon Federation Cardassian skirmish in season 4. Guess what? His big brother is like one of the big honchos in the Klingon Empire now.
Yeah.
And Kern is just doing what? Like, has no clue who he is. It's like, you got to resolve this somehow. Like, it just seems like a miserable existence for this man.
Yeah, that would have been really, I think that's one fans would have loved too. One that we've talked about in the past, but bears mentioning again, a follow-up to Unification, where we find out maybe a little more with what's going on with Sela. How is the reunification effort going? Did Spock ever accomplish anything? Something like that would have been nice, you know?
Yeah. One more for me. Let's go to Parallels, which is a very iconic season 7 episode of TNG. But yeah. I think that, you know, battered Riker, that from that parallel universe in which the Borg like won out that battle of Sector 001.
Mm-hmm.
What if instead of his ship being destroyed, he somehow made it back to our prime universe? And I don't know, maybe our crew has to team up with him and help him find a way to defeat the Borg in his universe. Maybe he brings back a huge drone of his own and introduces individuality to the Borg. I just feel like it was just such a one-off moment that is kind of stuck in our brains for a long time.
Right.
Fallen comrade Benjamin Young even dressed up like that version of Riker a couple Halloweens ago, which is pretty amazing. So
that totally would have been a fun one episode, like of just having that future Parallels Riker.
Yeah, I remember that same Halloween, I dressed up as Caveman Riker from Genesis, and everybody asked me what I was supposed to be.
Yeah.
No one got it.
No.
I was like, I don't care.
When you're dressing up as like Genesis TNG characters,
yeah,
you're not going to get a response in a public forum.
That's too bad. Yeah.
I guess just last for me, what of Lazarus?
Mm.
Okay, so I think on that note, our assignment is complete.
What a note.
If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Jump on over to the Facebook page at facebook.com/subspacepod. Tyler, what are we doing next time?
Okay, so we've finally gotten through all of the series premieres, and I think it's time for us to officially rank them. And we'll be discussing like what makes a series premiere good. And it's
because we got Picard coming up, so it'll be kind
of
timely.
I think it makes a lot of sense for us to kind of understand what makes for a strong series premiere. So look, we've got what, like 5-6 series almost, if you want to include the animated series,
yeah,
to kind of like investigate and figure out, you know, what their strengths are. This is going to be fun ranking all of them here, and I don't know, like they're on a spectrum here. They do range, so
yes, they definitely do. Yeah. Definitely do. Okay, so you can also find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam V as in Vox Sola sequel anyone Smith.
And I'm at Reportin, that's R-E-P-O-R-T-O-N, N as in no one wants a sequel to Meridian. Sigh.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.